Anyway, I would like to close this discussion for the time being and invite Toby to do his presentation on problems, possibilities, and directions in our bioregion. Please come here. And Toby, if you could say a few words to introduce yourself. I just know you as...
My name is Toby. I'm 42 years old. I come from Holland. I have one slide about Holland. You see Holland, how it is related with water. It's quite a problematic relation, I tell you. The slides are not so big. Huh? I've got a quite visual presentation. I lived for 49 years in Europe, in Holland, and was mainly busy with water. Water company, worked for European Community in water. And then I decided to come to Orville. And I know Orville since 72, 73, came every year, but 4 years ago something happened and I decided to come to stay. I think it's one of the best decisions I ever took in my life. So I'm very happy here, also busy in water, on a different scale with different problems, but in the end it's the same. It's the same. I live in the Green Belt, so I'm a Green Belter too. And I'm very happy that you all came on this rainy morning. We are far behind the rain schedules this year. We have almost one more meter to go in water for the end of the year. So you see that the drought we have this year is also pictured in one of those slides. What I wanted to do with each other, and if there's any question, please interrupt me, is to give you just a few examples, problems, solutions, how we are busy with water. In that sense, it's an overview. Many things I don't cover, and I could cover it. There are things which I have covered, and I made a selection of it. So please interrupt if you don't feel comfortable with it or you have a question about something else. How do I move the slides, Bindu? Is it just pressing a button or what? If you show me, then
yeah, there we go.
Which button? This one?
Yeah.
Okay, fine. And before I really start with the presentation, I like to start with this one. It's a strange story. Nice. This is the Crown Prince of the Netherlands, Willem-Alexander. And actually, we have in Holland a double relation with royalty. On one hand, we say, well, please, like many European countries did, get rid of them. But on the other hand, if you have a poll in the Netherlands, 85% really supports the royal house. His mother is the queen, Queen Beatrix, and she will stop being the queen within 2 years after her husband died and her father and her mother died in the last 3 years. She is more or less at the end of her term and she wants to hand it over to him. Well, of course, with every future king there are some doubts about his intelligence. And unfortunately, this chap did not escape this criticism. So 20 years ago, when he almost failed his law study in university, they had to find something else for him. So they put him in water. And that was a masterstroke. He gathered a few of top Dutch engineers around him, and he started to communicate about water management in the early 80s. He was one of the first. He invented water management. And when you're in Holland and you have really the best engineering companies in dikes and polders and whatnot, and he managed to surpass all the that beautiful theory of water management, he was suddenly a world star. The second thing, what he did, is that he took it from a governmental position. And that's something important I want to emphasize the whole presentation, because you need public power to do something in water. There was already here a discussion about the individual and the commons, but there is a public aspect poussant in this whole story. There you see the lady he married, that was Maxima. Her father was Argentina, and he was one of the Gunta members, so we had a problem with his marriage. And the Prime Minister decided they are allowed to marry, but the parents are not allowed to come in Holland. So that was a big thing when he married, and now he's got three wonderful kids, and in 2 years he is king. Although the prediction is that he will be the last like the Pope. Now something is... Bindu?
Yeah, this is 3. I can see that it's going up out.
It's Yeah, this one we have seen.
Yeah, no, I'm afraid that you may not have slides. See, this is showing 3.
Yes.
And if I go, it shows 4, but there's nothing on 4. 5, 6, 7.
That means that my whole presentation is...
Oh, wait, we got something. All right. Is this good? Oh, no, before that, there's nothing.
That'll be halfway, yeah, more or less.
Oh.
It's fine, but I can start anywhere I like, but...
I'm sorry, I don't think it's my... It's somehow the slides are missing.
No, I checked yesterday on the stick, they were all there.
I think you just need to assign the word.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Sorry. Oh, I got you. Okay, fine. Sorry. My problem. I'm always too quick. No, it still says click to add title, click to add text.
Can I do something?
This is your slideshow. I have it here.
Do you need a stick?
Oh, yeah, if you have. I don't think. Yeah. Toby?
Yeah?
Somehow the slide's missing. I think we copied it all fine, but I think somehow the slide's missing.
Well, I checked yesterday with reloading from the stick and everything was on it. Otherwise I do it by heart, no problem. Yes. Yes, she is. Otherwise, I start with...
Yeah, we may have to do that. Let's just see. I'll give it one more shot. Okay. If you want, you can continue. I'll try to. My computer is getting stuck. I'm trying to open it from the stick to see if the stick has something else. I really have a feeling that somehow the slides are missing. The computer is... Somehow seems corrupted. It's not opening from the stick.
Okay, then so we start where the first slide appeared.
Okay,
fine.
You're right.
Well, that's to be seen.
You want music?
No.
I'm trying to open it again from the stick. This is not going anywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the stick that's creating a problem. Let me just take out the stick. If there's anyone more...
I can use the stick after this, isn't it?
Okay, let's start.
Look. Ha! That's from very that. Well. This is the first and last flight of my country. Here you see Holland, 300 kilometers like this, 200 kilometers like this. So a queue of cars can never be longer than 300 kilometers than you are in Germany or in Belgium. Basically, the purple part is below sea level. It's quite well known that Holland is below sea level, but just actually to walk there and to imagine that you're 4, 5, 6, 7 meters below sea level is quite something. They even made poles of that height just to remind you that if the dikes break, then what kind of disaster it is happening. This means that the whole nation has a huge budget and huge programs to push the water out of the country. Every year, more or less 5-6 billion of euro is spent in hiring dikes, making pumps, making all kinds of security systems, just to keep the feet dry. If you don't do anything, the water comes up, and in 2-3 weeks, everything is flooded. So there are pumps, unimaginable how big they are, and there are procedures you don't imagine how you have to keep the country dry. Even then, we got big disasters. 53 was one of the worst floods. The whole south part was flooded. Whole south part that made the delta work. But last year, whole part came here. And now I'm telling you something which is the conclusion of this one. We were sea driven. We kept the sea out of the country. We forgot the back. The back of four big rivers. The Eems, the Rhein, the Maas, and the Schelde. Four big rivers. And they changed from glacier rivers into rain rivers. And it means that the amplitude of the water dramatically changed. So we were flooding inside the country instead of outside the country. And that was a major shift of the last 20 years where we had to go through. I'm just telling you how quickly a water situation can change. We've seen it all around here too. We'll come to this later. It works fantastic. Before we start, a few more remarks. First, I want just to tell you a few definitions about a water system, I have a few slides, and a water chain. It's important to feel the two differences. The water system is everything you see around you with water, with the seas and evaporation, all that things. And the water chain is basically you take the water, you drink it or you use it, it goes into the sewage system and it gets treated and then disposed back into the system. Both are public issues. And I cannot overemphasize this, and public responsibilities. As soon as public responsibility fades away, all kinds of things happen what you don't want. It needs really a strong governmental or public enforcement to get things to. I will come extensively to this. Here, the water system, just to give you an overview, and the main things is, of course, the sea. We have still... almost 73% of the total earth is seawater. That goes into the air, that goes into the land, then the rainfall, there it is packed in glaciers, then the rivers that come down, lakes, underground systems, and it goes back into the sea. That whole system is called the water system. This is the water chain, a typical and infrastructural kind of looking at it is extraction of water, it is the transport of water, it is the usage of water, it is the sewage system, it is treatment systems, and disposal back to the water system. It's typical and chain way of looking at it. Now we go a little bit more to the content of it. When we look at water as a whole, mainly as a system, there are many important policy aspects about it. I remember, and I will come later to it, when we made the river basin laws in Europe, when we made a law of all the, that we had to specify what kind of functions all the water bodies in Europe had to have. That is at the moment missing in India. It is in development. I know that the Ministry of Water Resources is really busy with it, but it is still lacking behind. And one of the most important policy areas is health and quality of the water. We cannot overemphasize how important for environmental health it is to keep the water in a good condition. And there are many, many parameters. I can give you sheets and sheets of parameters, what the health quality parameters are, in a sense, what kind of fishes, what kind of bacteria, what kind of elements there should be in. But this is one of the main important policies. The second one is the availability of water. If you see that the total amount of water of this earth, which is huge, and that only a few percent is fresh water, and only that few percents is mainly in the South Pole, in Antarctica, and on Greenland, which is rapidly declining in the volume, then you see there a future water stress is coming. So the availability of water, although there is a lot of water, fresh water is very limited, and that limited water is declining in a very high speed. Security, I don't have to go through this. Of course, food, we use water for agriculture, we use water for fish cultivation, we use water for a lot of things like it. Transport, it's underestimated how important water is for transport. I remind you that in most of the countries, the transport systems which arose were mainly about water, because on the roads that were bumpy and everything broke, so it took the water. Most cities are founded around water. Recreation, very important these days. Protection of environment, of wildlife, aesthetics, energy, I can go on and on and on. Those are all those policy fields where water is somehow related. In that sense, water is completely integrated with your body. And also your body is almost 80% water, so there is some connection. It's a very interesting, and that's a little bit of a sideline, that more and more studies, and especially also here in Oroville, we see that quality of body and quality of water are very related. Water has, and I'm saying something which is perhaps a little bit odd for our mind, is water has a memory. When it flows through high mountains and when it flows through certain kinds of soil, it remembers where it has been. And when you start drinking and consuming the water, the body also comes in that same vibration. This is behind the theories and the practice of dynamizing water, which is more and more common. There are even now drinking water companies in Europe and in America which have started to dynamize the water, because they know that if water has a certain vibration, it has a positive effect on health. It is still small, and here and there, it is a little precious, but it is coming. It is coming. We are coming out of those experiments, and it is used more and more. The administration levels for water, I will give you a few slides about different levels that you can look at water, is of course the union, which has its responsibility. It looks at the total water which is available, and looks at the total water which is needed, and looks at the qualities which is needed, and look at the qualities which is available, and try to match those two. But on state, district, and local level, exactly the same happens for those levels. The big problem here is that we are talking about union, state, district, and local. The water doesn't follow these administrative borders. Water is borderless. And you will see that as soon as you start looking at how water behaves, then all those artificial boundaries are really useless. The last one, actually the most important one, and there was already here a discussion, one of the main reasons why public enforcement is relevant is that on the individual, but you can also say on a group level or state level or whatever, that the individual advantage which is there when there is not a collective way of looking at it has immediately a collective response. For instance, if you throw away your waste, you have an individual advantage. And if everybody is throwing its waste, then everybody has an individual advantage. Is this is okay? Or?
Yeah,
okay. As an individual. But the total becomes a chaos. And this is, we are in some sort of a prisoner dilemma every time. Eh? You look, there's those two people who are in the present, and when you say, oh, I set you free, as you soon accuse him, and I set you free, as you accuse him, and both start accusing each other, so both are in prison. We are more or less in this kind of a situation with water. As soon as we impose, develop public rules on this, then things start to regulate, and the history has enough examples of this. Here we have two maps of India. And one of the main divisions in the whole water problem is looking at rivers. If you look at India here, and we look at especially the west coast of the east coast, where I will say a few things, then we have the monsoons coming to the west, then immediately the land rises, rain falls, and basically the water is coming back. So we have a cycle which goes like this in the two monsoons. That is the beauty of South India. And here falls about 4,500 millimeters, which is 5,000. It's extremely much. It's really a lot of rain. And here we come between 900 and 1,200 millimeters of rain. But the cycle is like this. Also, these maps give you a beautiful overview where really the big rivers are. I was hoping that I could enlarge it a little bit, that on these plains that usually the rivers start in a mountainary area and find its way to the sea. So all the big rivers, you will see them here. It is those rivers who are the key in the whole water system. It is the rivers who are the whole flow who give water to the aquifers, where the main irrigation starts from, where the drinking water starts from. It is really the rivers, they are the main source of water. And what I already said, there are two kind of rivers. There are glacier rivers, high in the mountains the water falls and it becomes ice and snow and ice, and during the summer it starts to melt, and then the river is filled with that glacier water. These are usually quite smooth rivers. They don't go up very much, they don't go down very much, they have quite a smooth amplitude. Rain rivers are different. When there is no ice, immediately during the rain seasons or whatever, it goes up, and when there's no reason, it immediately goes down. They have a higher velocity, what we say. Makes a big difference in the amount of water, makes a big difference in the diking, makes a big difference in all these kind of things. So it's important to follow. In Europe, most of the glacier rivers have turned into rain rivers. In India, we still have, especially in the north, a few glacier rivers, but it's getting less and less and less. If you see the ice going up into the Himalayas, it goes higher and higher the last 10 years. Here we have just a few slides to give you an idea about the total water stress where we found ourselves in. Here in India, if you look at the per capita cube meter availability of water, it drops and will drop from 1900 cube a person to almost a little bit less than 1200 cube a person. It is 2050, so we have a few more years to go, but if you see the speed how it is decreasing, it is really alarming. And the main water usage is the increase of population, which is gigantic still, and second, it is the increase of wealth. When wealth increases, it's one of the most important denominators for increased water usage. Industrial, because people need products, agriculture, people need food, and just the normal consumption of water goes up. 2050, there are a few different statistics, but we think that 1.4 billion people will be here, and the water need will be 1180, something like this. And if you read those pages of the Ministry of Water Resources, and I really recommend that you read them, because they're very informative, you see that around that time, 2050, you're really in the stress that in absolute terms, the amount of water, what is needed, is becoming low. What is available is becoming low, what is needed. Here, just a little thing about the glaciers and ice and the fresh water available for use. You see that the total amount of water in the world is quite a lot, but if you see the amount of fresh water then it is really not so much. By the way, India is not the only country which is facing this problem. It is a worldwide problem, especially here the red and yellow countries face this stress, but basically it is international. If I look at the situation in Spain, where I did a lot of research, where I did the situation in Turkey, where I did research, if I see the situation in Saudi Arabia and Israel, it is more or less the same. Only Spain tried, that was a very nice project by the way, to capture icebergs here and bring them to Spain. And after the fifth iceberg, we found out that during the travel we lost about 60-70% of the iceberg, of course. And then it was in the harbor and nobody knew what to do with that iceberg. It was a strange view, have an iceberg in the middle of San Sebastian. But nevertheless, we tried and it didn't work out. So now there's a desalination plant, of course. And especially in where the big water consumption in Spain is, of course, in the coast, because whole Europe wants to go to the coast. And there it doesn't rain, especially not in the summer. So we wanted to bring the iceberg all around, and then we lost another 40%. So before the ice was there, it was only fresh water. We did it with five icebergs, and then we stopped. Climate change, just a little thing. We all know it's about fossil resources. These are figures of 2005. Oil, we have still 40 years to go before it's gone. Natural gases, we have still a little bit more. And coal, we can do a little bit more than 100. And then we have carbonized our whole atmosphere as it was about 600 million years ago. And that is about the state of our race. So the stress is really coming. I saw 2 weeks ago here a movie called Home, and it gave in a beautiful way exactly this problem, although it had a quite positive ending. We go to bioregion scale. First, in the bioregion scale, it's important to localize the rivers. And when you see the rivers here in the south, it is mainly the Kovri. This is the real water map of India. When you go from union to state, from state to district, from district to local, you won't find it here. Although there is usually some correlation between watersheds, rivers and states, because people tend to live around rivers, tend to live around water bodies. So usually there is a correlation. But this map has some resemblance with administrative area, but you see also big differences. That is usually where conflicts start. If you see the Kovri River, which runs through four states, every year there is something to do with this river.
Can you explain this map?
Sorry.
The right side?
The right side?
Yeah.
What you see here is there are borders marked around the river basin. So this map, all the river basins have been depicted, so all the big rivers, and these are the boundaries of the watersheds of these rivers. That's the only thing that has been done there. And my point is that usually these kind of maps are different than administrative maps. If I look, for instance, in Europe, to give you just two, three sentences what happened there, and I'm not saying it should happen here too. In Europe it was, let's say 20, 25 years ago, clear that the condition of the rivers was deteriorating badly, especially in Germany and especially in the north of France. The European community took an initiative to save all the rivers. So they made a law with all the countries where there were administrative bodies for every river that had its own public rights, public possibilities of doing things. Take for instance the Rhine, one of the largest rivers in Europe. There came one administrative area in five countries only for this river. And only this body could decide what happened with the river. It was taken away from the national countries. So targets were set in health of the river, in functions of the river, in all kinds of that kind of, and it was executed. And this saved the rivers. Most of the rivers really got back into the old shape. Even salmon came back, and in some rivers even quite a rare species of fishes came back, and that saved the river. And this is actually also a point here, that if we want to save rivers, you have to make an administrative area around the whole river basin. That's the only way to regulate the thing in the rivers. Here we have the river, one of the main rivers here in the south, the Kobri. Last year, Water Harvest did, together with the Institut Français, a complete survey and research about this river, from how big is it, what is the demand in the future, what is the availability, what all these things. And you see four states are connected or involved, the Tamil Nadu very much, Karnataka very much, Kerala, and Puducherry a little bit less because it's a bit smaller. And you see that the river starts almost in the west of India, in the highlands there, and come all the way down till here in the bay of Bengal. Apart from the whole report, this is what we found out after a year of research. And see this. This was the most important thing. There are many tables and whatever. The renewable freshwater resources is 31 cubic kilometer for the whole river. So we found out after a lot of research, a measuring of the flow, a measuring of the rainwater, measuring of the replenishes of the aquifers, that the total amount of water which is usable without touching the river is about 30 cubic kilometer. That's quite a lot. The withdrawal at the moment is 20 cubic kilometer. So there is still some space. It's 10 kilometer left. But if we make the projections towards the next 20, 25, 30 years, and you see the population growth in that South India area, and you make projections about the industrial growth, and you make projections about the agriculture growth, you go in 2045, you go higher than the 30 cubic kilometers, and that means at that moment that you have a net deficit of water, and immediately the stress is there. And because infrastructure terms takes quite a long time to build and behavior changes, I will come to this, you really have to start otherwise you're really too late. You need 10, 15 years to adjust water behavior or infrastructure. When I'm running out of time, I get a signal of you.
The other two speakers haven't showed up still.
No, Jaap is here.
Okay.
Here we zoom in. In the bioregion, we come closer and closer to Auroville. No rivers. Televeli tank. You see a lot of water bodies, ponds, little lakes, and that kind of thing. So it is quite rich in water, but no rivers. No rivers. I told you that the monsoon is going inland. The water falls down. And from the highlands it comes gradually to the coast, and very cleverly 500-600 years a whole system of ponds for irrigation has been built, a very clever system demolished by the British, but here and there still intact and here and there under rehabilitation. But this is the situation of the bioregion. You see it here more in detail how many connected ponds there are. This is going up in highlands. It's almost all collected here on this side of the Kalaveli tank. It takes about 30 million cubes a year. Heavily polluted water, by the way, but if you see that this is mainly agricultural land where fertilizers are used and where solid waste management is deposed, and then really this is quite dirty. I once did a few tests here in the quality of the Kalaveli tank, and we found 600 kinds of pesticides, and the only reason why it was only 600 is because we could not measure more. So it's a brackish, the seawater is coming in. By the way, this is a beautiful area for water reservoir. If you disconnect it from the sea and start to impose the level of fertilization, and you have a beautiful sweet water body here which can be used in the whole bioregion. We come here to the bioregion, and we go just quickly through the resources. We have a sea available here, and that's very important also for the future. The big disadvantage of the sea The advantage is there's a lot of water. The disadvantage is that it's salt. Everybody who knows the sea is salt, so if you want to drink, to use it for irrigation purposes or for drinking purposes, you have to desalinate it. And desalination is a common process that has developed gigantically the last 15 years, but nevertheless you have a brine, a lot of brine, so salt which comes out, and you need a lot of power. The electricity bill is quite high. The second problem of sea, it's on sea level. So yeah, of course water is on sea level, but to transport water has two big disadvantages. One, water is heavy. And when it is heavy, it means that you need a lot of energy to transport it. And the second one is, as soon as you start transporting water, every 100 meter of distance, the quality gets down. So there are a few disadvantages. Rain, we have about, I hope, this year also 1200 millimeters a year. That's quite a lot. European countries usually have between 600 and 700 millimeters a year, and here it is 1200. And we say it's a lot, but when you go up to the west, it increases even to 5000 millimeters a year. Uncertain in quantity and timing. there is a vision that we should gradually transform ourselves towards rainwater driven society. It's possible, the availability is enough, but those two things, quantity, timing, and I could evenly add quality of the rainwater, there are some things to address, especially the infrastructure to catch rainwater and to store rainwater in the amounts what we needed is really huge, it's really huge. But it is possible. If you see what the Romans did, they built aqueducts, I don't know exactly but what kind of cost calculations they did, but it took 40, 50, 60 years to build an aqueduct. They're still there, so the depreciation is not so high. So I'm just saying it is possible, but you need for some years some funds to do it. Lakes, Calaveri tank, I showed you the tank, polluted and brackish. It's a huge, it's a beautiful water body, also for recreations, but those two things. And it is quite near, it is quite near. And then the aquifers. The aquifers is at this moment our main water resource. Aquifers are huge underground water storage systems. And we have, where you are now, when we go down into the ground, we have about 6, 7, 8 aquifers of different size and different qualities. The two big ones is the Vanoor and the Cuddalore aquifer. Those two aquifers have extensively been researched in their availability and long-time provision of water. I think I have a picture here somewhere. Oh, now we... No, I go back. I don't have been extensively researched about their long-term availability of water. What is happening there is that the over-extraction has come to such an amount that every year the level of those aquifers are going down. And we're talking about meters a year. Sometimes it's 1 meter, sometimes it's 4 meter. It depends a bit on the rainfall, it depends a bit on the amount of extraction, but we see it going down and going down and going down. So models have been made, how long can we still have that aquifer? And basically, what our models are telling us, between 4 and 10 years, something like this, the aquifers are completely empty. As soon as the aquifers are empty, the salt intrusion will come. We already see it in our sheets that the salt intrusion is coming in. And it means that we have a big problem, that it is for a very long time not usable anymore. And long time means 100, perhaps even thousands of years, before it is completely recharged again. This is the main problem of this area. The whole area, Beer region, is geared on those aquifers. The government is stimulating this. Pumps are subsidized. Electricity is for free. When you have a look around here, you see this amount of water being pumped continuously. We see flood irrigation for the paddy, we see flood irrigation for coconut, we see flood irrigation for different kind of crops. And basically there is not any resistance, not any blocking of water usage. If you look at how much is going in the aquifers and how much going in, it's about tenfold. So we know we are heading for a disaster. Here comes that public responsibility. This is common knowledge. It's common knowledge here, It's called Common Knowledge in Pondicherry, in Chennai, in the Water Board. It's also in central government. There are programs to save the aquifers. When you look at the national point of view and at the long-term water supply for a country like this, then you see that there are many, many of those aquifers in a country which are more or less in these kind of conditions. Some are worse, some are better. So from a governmental point of view, you direct the funds where it is most effective to bring the water, where the population growth and population is highest. That's not in this area. If you see the amount of problems in aquifers, you see the total amount of budgets, there's really a mismatch. So I don't think that this aquifer will come quickly under governmental look to save it. Although there is, from Arville's side, a huge project in preparation to save at least the Vanu aquifer. I'm not going to all the details about this project, especially around Rauf Ali, CSR, Water Harvest. They're working on quite a huge project to save. But that means infrastructure for catching rain. That means agriculture change, because this is the main thing. That means forestization. Well, there's a big question mark. It means social mobilization. It means all these kind of things to save the aquifers. When the aquifers are down, we have to make a huge shift to other water resources. And we don't have much time. Water is infrastructure related, so if you want to make that change into, let's say, a rain-driven economy or a sea-driven economy, then you really have to start now. One, don't give up in saving the aquifer, but at the meantime, prepare already before this situation will arise, and that is in 5, 6, 7, 8 years from now. I give you a few examples of our behavior on water. Improper agriculture management practices, with a plural, flood irrigation. Then we have still coconuts here, and we have still random planting paddy here. We still grow sugarcane here. We still have all the kind of things which consumes a lot of water. And not only it needs a lot of water, but we use even more water than is needed in the way we irrigate it. Over-extraction, coastal salt intrusion, coming more and more. I can show you the maps on the whole coast where the salt intrusion is step by step coming in. The tsunami did not help there, but that was only one flow. But more systematically is what is happening underground. Erosion. Actually, in Arville, there is no runoff anymore. All the check dams in and around Arville, which are 30, 35 more or less, are keeping the water inside Arville. So the total runoff, where all the red sand went to the sea, which is what we see here, that erosion, is stopped. I think this is one of the big advantages of efforts of what the earlier and ill today Arvillians have done, just to keep the water here on this plateau. It has really a positive effect. This has a positive effect. Our consumption, by the way, in Arville is very high in water. That's the other, because we are gardening and planting trees. I'm not saying negative, I only say it uses a lot of water. And poor maintenance of water structures. If you're driving your motorbike or car and you look around and all the water structures all around, which have 2 years been built now, or people are hacking it because they get wet feet, the water is coming up, or it is badly built and then pieces fall away, or the water goes around it. I'm not saying that all the structures are bad, but in one of the three, something is going on. We in Water Harvest, we built the last 3 years in check dams and all that kind of things, about 9 different ones, and 3 need heavily maintenance. Wrong cement what has been used, people hacking pieces away because they don't want the water at that high. There was a soil mistake, so the water is bypassing it, and things like this. Water extraction. Here you see that especially in this part, which is heavily agriculture that a lot of water is extracted, and mainly in flood irrigation there, but also here. And right now there's a lot of cashew tope, but also that the paddy is taking shape. The depletion of the groundwater. We have about 275 monitoring bore wells, where we every week measure how deep the aquifers are and how much rain has fallen, and we can see that we see that every year 3, 4, 5 meters of the aquifer is going down. In different parts in the country, in the area, it is different, but the overall image that it is really still going down. Salination of groundwater. The redder it becomes, the more salinated it is. You see especially here in the Kaliveli tank here, in the north of this area, in the south of the Kaliveli swamp, all the water is collected in the west side of the Kaliveli. Kaliveli itself is, and it goes here into the aquifers. So it's heavily polluted and salinated water is coming there in the aquifers, and that is what we measure. And you see it gradually increasing. It's not going fast, it is really gradually in increasing. 5 minutes? Okay, fine. The state of the water structures, I already told you something about the infrastructure. I'll give you many more pictures. Kaliveli swamp presentation, I already said. It's mainly this one where the big recharge is. But if you look at the whole Kaliveli tank, which is one of the most beautiful areas, shrimp farming is really polluting it, salt intrusion is coming in, and beside of this, yeah, pesticides, fertilizer, solid waste, everything is dumped there. And you see many areas where we have depicted where this is happening. When we look at the future, you say, well, what do we want? Huh? Where are we heading? You say, look, in the opportunity atmosphere, we still have quite a lot of rain here, and we really should use it. I'm not saying we should be a completely rain economy, but as much as possible. You need so much infrastructure, but you should start building. Otherwise, in 10 years' time, you lose. So we should start building. One of our opportunities is research. If you see how much research in India is done about water, it is really amazing. India is getting step by step one of the top water institutes in the world. So this is really good. But also here in Orville, if I see how much research is done in Orville about wastewater, wastewater treatment, I think we have the possibility here in Orville to become really a wastewater hub. And if you see in the long term, we have to reduce our usage and we have to reuse our water. Well, in that reduce part, there's where wastewater treatment plays a major role. Funds are really available. It's not a matter of money anymore. Speed of development, India goes with a high speed, so there we have something that we really can help. But it is going very quick. If you see all the aquifers, if you see all the rivers, if you see all the water bodies, it's going very quick because the population and the wealth is going up. Climate change, I've said nothing yet about the climate change, but it's really alarming if you see the graphs. Infrastructure, it is not geared for the future yet. Usage, too high. Orville uses 400 liters a person. 400 liters a person. In Europe it is between 100 and 150. So it's much too high. We really have to reduce it. This matter of behavior and technology. Management. That's a difficult one. I was in the Engineering Institute in New Delhi and they say, well, 2% of the people who have a study here are really good engineers. That means that 98% is not. At least we have good ones, but at least there's also something else. Execution. We are very poor in execution, especially public rules in execution. Well, I can go on for this. Then integrated management, make some kind of a definition. You need all the resources. It has a social dimension. Governmental, very important. Administrative levels, you have to go to all the levels. You cannot have that you do something here and there they don't do. It has to correlate with each other. And sustainability. Last, but the most important one. And in the sustainability parameters, you just say, quality has to improve or stay on that level. The availability has to improve or stay on this level. Or you look at the long-term environmental need and you gear on that, what happened to the European rivers and what happens to happen here too. I'm not going to all the detail for all the water bodies here around Orville, but this is the main thing. Just a few things what we do and then I stop. Monitoring resources. important activity of water harvest. I said 275 bore wells. We measure all the lakes, we measure all the ponds, we measure all these kind of things in quality, quantity, and all that every month again. So we know the rainfall, we know that these things, these are basics, that's basics. What we do is we try to understand the behavior of the usage. So we have people in the villages, we have people in the farms who stay there and see how the agriculture practices are, we see how the people use their water. There are about 20 people whose daily activities is in the projects, living in the villages, just to see how the water behavior is there. New technologies, we try to make Google images including the GPS points, and then we can make very precise landscaping so we can follow the landscapes. This is one of the first, we just started a month that we are also studying all the propensities of the Matrimondier Lake, and this is one of the first studies. Here's the Matrimondier, here's the oval, and this is in a Google picture which has been adjusted to the GPS information, so we get a feeling for what kind of altitude and how the water will run as soon as we start doing things there. And we have this for many areas that we see what is happening there. This is all Orville. Yeah, this is the crown road here. That was before we started paving it. And let me see. Yeah, this is the south part of Orville. Here the Saravanans land, and there is this is the green belt, of course. Infrastructure building before and after. This is one of the success stories that we manage the water here for recharge and for agricultural usage. Village ponds, one of our success stories. It's not only for water harvesting and for irrigation, but also for fish cultivation, and that's for own consumption or for the market. And that means that you have an organization, and that means that...
I think we lost power.
There's no UPS? So this was a natural end of my speech?
You can continue without the picture.
Well, this is one of the last. If you see, it means that you have an organization who takes care of the water. It means an organization who takes care of the fishes. It means an organization who goes to the market. It means all these kind of things which you have to organize. So that whole social mobilization and training of people just to get a reduction in water, just to get mere consciousness about water. So on one hand, I'm telling you that public responsibility is important just to come with the right rules. But on the other side, you need projects which fit in, and then little success stories start. This is what I wanted to say.
Thank you very much, Toby. That was a very comprehensive...
Can the stick come out?
Yeah, I'll give it to you. That was a very comprehensive overview, and I didn't know of water harvest work in the Kaveri River Basin. That's huge.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Time for chai and a break. Toby's, of course, around, and we'll still have time for discussion after the next two presenters, and after the break we'll have Yap. So let's take 10-15 minutes.